In this podcast, we're going to explore, discuss, and gain confidence in the sciencey idea that the work done on an object, and we'll describe that in detail, the work done on an object equals to the change in kinetic energy, the moving energy of the object. So if you put energy into an object, that object has moving energy, or that moving energy can be taken out of an object. Now, this is Peter Hill Explains, where I discuss things scientific or talk in detail about teaching techniques. And again, this particular technique is trying to search for not telling people sort of advanced understanding, but to sort of discuss things and build your a confidence and understanding by discussing something that you might know. Now, we'll start off by saying that I can do any form of work by applying a force to something over a distance, and all that force applied to a distance is stored in some form of energy. It's stored, say, in spring energy, or it's stored as force over distance. So I can do work on a spring, and that's conservative work, or I can do work lifting up a weight into the air against a mass against the spring of gravity, and that's work. And doing work over a distance, if I pushed for 1 meter with a force of 1 newton, a capital N, that would have the definition of having done some work, or having energy equal to 1 newton. So that's a by definition, and you might be familiar with this and have been told that. And that's often given as customary knowledge. That is, there's no strong explanation for why that can go, but you can sort of see that the energy, I can store energy by lifting up a sack through a pulley system and then releasing it. That releases energy. And we say that equals the change in kinetic energy, and we'll just familiarize you with what is defined as kinetic energy. And again, this is customary knowledge, or that is, there's not a big derivation of it. You're just told that customary knowledge is related. You're told that kinetic energy is related to something by a formula. So, whereas the energy of an object depends on its location, in general, that is, the energy of an object of a kilogram of sugar, for instance, is changed as it's lifted from your shopping bag up to the top shelf of where it's stored. That energy is changed. The energy is related to position. The kinetic energy is not related to position at all. It's related to its rate of change of position, its velocity. And that has a formula of half times the mass times the velocity square. Now, you write that as a half mv with a small superscript squared. That's v times v. That, again, can give you something called an energy. I'll be continuing this. So that can give you an energy. And say, for instance, I have a kilogram of mass, say my kilogram of sugar, and I'm throwing it across the room horizontally at 2 meters per second. So that's 2m mid dot s to the minus 1, or 2 meters slant s per second. Depending if younger students will need meters per second, but you'll need to put that through. That will have a kinetic energy of a half times 1 times 2 squared, which is 4, and so that will have an energy of 2 kilogram midpoint meter squared mid dot s to the minus 2 units, and we're saying that that is also a energy, so you could also write that as joules for it, or you could also write it as newton dot meters. It's all this, or can we're going to say that's all the same, that the work done on an object is the change in the kinetic energy of the object. So initially, the initial kinetic energy is zero because it's stationary, and the final is at 2 meters per second. So to get into that energy state, it must have had a work done on it of 2 joules. So that's, say, 2 newtons applied to it over a meter's distance, or 20 newtons applied over 10 centimeters, or 200 newtons applied over 1 centimeter distance. It's force times distance. And this is sort of taught over and over again by examples drilled into people. And there's really nothing like exercises and examples of things being lifted up and dropped down, and lots of calculations to do with it. And this is the beauty of Newton's laws, that in a conservative system, one of the things that happens in Newton's is that in the simple Newton, there's no friction. So if there's friction in any of this, the force of the distance wouldn't be put into the energy of the particle. So it's, we call that conservative, that the action conserves the conversion of kinetic energy into potential energy, is a conserved energy transformation. The energy transfers are conservative. Also, for Newton's laws N1 and N2, Newton's first law and Newton's second law, to apply, it has to be in an inertial frame, which is a simple way of saying it's got to be in a situation where Newton's laws apply, but also there can't be an overall acceleration for it, so you have to modify. And often we have this modification of gravity. We have to add that into Newton's laws in a funny sort of hand-waving way. In this podcast, I'm going to go in and explain, talk you through Newton's second law and wind you up in an interesting destination. But before we do that, we have to look at a few things, like what is the distance. If something starts with a first velocity and ends with a final velocity, and it changes its velocity uniformly, linearly with time, what is its acceleration? So if something starts off at 10 meters per second and over 10 seconds slowly accelerates, uniformly accelerates at a constant rate of constant change of speed, and by the end of 10 seconds, from 0 to 10 seconds, it goes to 20 meters per second, what is the acceleration by how much has it changed? What is the rate of change of speed per second if it's changed from 10 meters per second to 20 meters per second over 10 seconds? Now, you can probably do that in your head and say, well, that's 1 meter per second per second. So that's m dot s minus 2, m mid dot s minus 2 meters per meters per second squared. You can do it in your head, but let's do it algebraically. Now, there's a tendency in the old money, old school, to use crude symbols to agree with a textbook that a teacher used, which agreed with the textbook that an earlier teacher used, and they want to initially tell you that the initial speed is u and the final speed is v. That's quite easy to do. uv gives you partition of speeds, and they give you these formulas to remember, rote learn. But let's slip into the modern era and call the initial velocity VI and the final velocity VF. When I say F, I mean a subscript F. And the way to actually generate this calculation is that the change or the acceleration is equal to, in brackets, VF minus VI all over time. So store that away, probably scribble that down, that A. Now, A, you can put a subscript of the object, but we're only having one object, one body here, because it's in Newton's formula, the object or thing we describe as a body. But because we've got no, we're only talking about one thing, and it's going to be a simple way, we're not going to say anything about it. So we're going to say A equals, in brackets, VF minus VI on time. So that's the acceleration of that object. And by putting it into formula, we can actually have any final velocity and any initial velocity and any time and work out what the acceleration is. We can have a negative acceleration, that is, it starts off at 20 and finishes at 10. You put that into your formula and you get minus 1 meters per second to the minus 2. So it's important that you do put the units here, because we are in physics and there's a difference between a number, which is a ratio, and a number, which is a quantity of something that you measure. So for anything you measure, you have a ruler or something, and you've got to say what you're measuring it with. And again, we use kilograms, meters, and seconds, because down the track, all our physics formulas are going to work with that. We've squared and defined, cross-defined everything. So we've taken all the worry out of it, and we've hidden a lot of things from you by forcing you to select that. We give you, again, it's a customary thing. You'll just have to learn that as part of physics culture. So we've got these things which we're going to introduce, and I've obviously begun talking about work, that's force over distance and kinetic energy, but at the moment I've started off with acceleration, a simple thing, which is a simple earlier thing. Another thing besides acceleration is the average velocity. So this is this unit, this thing, which is travelling at a uniform acceleration. So what's its average velocity? So going right back, it started at 10, ended at 20, and it changes uniformly. You can possibly do it in your head and say that the average velocity is 15 meters per second. But what we have to do is to generalize that and convert it into a formula. So the formula we're going to start to describe it is V final plus V initial on 2. So you sum everything and divide it by 2. That's how you do averages. And so in school, you have to, when you're teaching this, is check that people can do averages to start off with, know what the average is of 3 or 4 things. And so we now have we have a formula for the average velocity of a uniformly accelerating object, and we're going to look at uniformly accelerating objects. Uniformly accelerating objects will be ones which are under constant unbalanced force. There you go. And we're going to have to tell you about unbalanced forces and all that type of stuff. But under constant force, it will have constant acceleration. Under constant acceleration, it will change from one velocity to the other, and be defined, its acceleration will be defined by the change of velocity over time, and its average velocity will be the sum of velocities divided by 2. However, we can actually do things and note here, and again we can prove it, but in this case, For this one, I'm going to ask you just to accept that something travels a certain distance, and the distance that's travel is defined by the velocity times the time that it has been traveling at that velocity. And you can show here that something travels at a velocity, it will travel at a distance between when it's uniformly varying its velocity by its average velocity times the time. So the distance that something travels when under uniform acceleration is given by Vf, or in brackets, Vf plus Vi divided by 2 times the amount of time that it's taken. So we've got two formulas here to remember. We're going to drop the, average velocity formula and remember the distance formula. Now, the distance formula, remember, is a distance, a comparative distance for a situation. So you measure the distance at the initial and the position at the initial minus the distance at the initial and the distance where it or position where it finally measures, the difference between those two positions is the distance travelled. So we'll have D in this situation equals Vf plus Vi all on 2 times time, that's the distance, and the acceleration is V final minus V initial on 2. And that's the thing, is that I want you to put away in the top of your head, and we're going to swap over to this formula, Newton's second formula, N2, which written out fully is the sum of forces, the vector sum of forces equals the mass times the vector of acceleration. But we're going to simplify it to saying that there's only one force in here. It's something on an air track or something in deep space, and it's not a system, it's a body. It has a force being acted on it, and we're going to say that we'll simplify this equation by saying F equals ma, and often people will be taught that level, and then the more complicated one will be added and people will not necessarily get there and then forget about it when the formula is not necessary. So really, in teaching, you really have to unfortunately go to the more complex and then go down again, so the transition up is more acceptable. But in this case, we are going down, F equals ma. And what we're going to do is multiply both sides by D. So force times distance, that should ring a bell, equals MAD, mass times acceleration times the distance. We've just multiplied both sides by distance. We could multiply it by 2, but in this case we've decided the number that we're going to select happens to be the distance. Now we have to go through and on our right hand side, the MAD, convert that into velocity numbers, velocity and time numbers. So it's M, put that aside. The acceleration is Vf minus Vi all on 2. And the distance is Vf plus Vi. Let me start the one again. The acceleration is Vf minus Vi all on time, and the distance is Vf plus Vi all on 2 times time. So for the acceleration, I've got a formula of the velocity divided by time. For the distance, I've got a formula involving velocity times time. So I divide and multiply by the same number, I can remove that. So I have another simpler equation that the velocity equals Vf M times VF minus VI into, that's a bracket, and another bracket I've got VF plus VI on 2. The timers have now been cancelled. The 2 is divided by 2s at the back. I'll move that up to the front, so I'll have a half M VF minus VI into VF plus VI, and I have to now cross multiply those two brackets, so that's equivalent to saying in brackets A minus B into A plus B, and depending on your maths, you'll know the mathematical identity that A minus B into A plus B is A squared minus B squared. So let's see how that stacks up. Now, you may know that exactly, but we'll go through and actually do that calculation out. Now, what I've done is I've converted A and B to VF and VI. But I'm doing A and B so I don't wear your brain out. This is something that I've chosen to do, swap to do. I wouldn't do in the blackboard, but I do in a podcast so I don't wear out your register, your memory register, because I'm now sensing, got a sense of what you can possibly remember. So A minus B into A plus B. So let's do this. It's A times A plus A times B. So that's the first term of the first bracket multiplied by the individual terms of the second bracket. So that's, put that aside, that's A squared plus AB, and then minus B times A, that's minus AB, minus B times B is minus B squared. So that reads A squared plus AB minus AB minus B squared. You cancel the two inner terms, that's AB minus, I suppose, BA, and you are left with A squared minus B squared. And so let's convert this back into VF, and I then have the following things, that force times distance equals a half M in brackets VF squared minus VI squared. So I now have, expanding that bracket with the half M, this is a conventional thing because I'm going to have this formula that force times distance equals a half M V final squared minus a half M V squared. Now, at this stage, although this has got a deeper understanding, deeper terms, deeper understanding to get there, I'm going to say that force times distance, I now, from here on, define force times distance to be work. I now also define a half mv squared to be the kinetic energy. And so a half mv squared is the final kinetic energy, and a half mv final squared is the initial kinetic energy. Half mv initial squared is the initial kinetic energy. Note that kinetic energy it depends on an object at a particular point in time, whereas work corresponds to a position, a change in position of an object. And so what's happened is that we've started off with Newton 2, we've had a simple manipulation of the formula, and then we've said to teach this formula to people, we are now going to define terms of that formula as terms that everyone will recognize. And so this is in fact how it happened, that force equals the final kinetic energy minus the initial kinetic energy. So that's a correction. The work done equals the change in the kinetic energy. And so What's really happened is that at a particular point we've had the equation, and then we've converted the equation to words, and then we've contracted the words down into a shorter sentence. And so this fundamental formula has evolved into a common sentence and has entered our culture. We now know what the kinetic energy is, but kinetic energy began with a formula. So we have this teaching problem that what we do is we teach these definitions and then we explore the formula. But really, the formula came first. That impacted the culture, stored the terms of the formula in the culture, and now we are sort of reverse teaching it. Now, the overall idea of this particular podcast is similar to the one on vectors, the one on Newton's N1, N2, N3, is just to go over the same area in different levels, like lacquering it with paint, and slowly build up your confidence. So in this, I hope listening it, yes, there is a trick to it, and it reinforces the, I suppose, a bit more meaning or background to the understanding. There is actually at this level no meaning ever given, but this releases a cultural meaning, and it will mean that when you encounter examples, you'll be less reliant on rote learning, which is the fundamental investment we do. We do a huge amount of rote learning or experiential learning to teach the various concepts of velocity, acceleration, time, mass, all the things that you have to go in to actually run this. And at the end, we have to actually produce a product which appears that people can produce it. Do they produce it due to, I suppose, conditioning? I think Einstein called it clever hands. This is where people produce results, but and this is a horse, a famous horse, I think it was in Vienna, used to tap with its hoof and be looking at cues from the trainer, it turned out. But this is someone who's conditioned to produce the result, as opposed to someone who understands the result. And indeed, at this stage, there is a bit of a cultural smoke and mirrors, i.e. that we started off the equation. At a particular point of the equation where it was our formula, we gave it words, and those words have entered our culture, and now we go backwards. So that's an important thing to say. I hope this has been useful. Thanks for listening. This is Peter Hill Explains. Bye.